My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Is there a connection between life, death, and the beyond? Is there an afterlife? And if so, what lessons may we learn from it and those who have passed on? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Nicole Strickland, has researched these questions virtually her entire life, including personal experiences which led to many answers. One of the leading paranormal and afterlife researchers on the West Coast, Nicole Strickland has been interested in the supernatural since childhood. In addition to her innate psychic and empathic abilities, Nicole's experience in the fields of counseling, education, psychology, and social work give her a unique perspective on studying the unknown. She is known for her gentle and humble approaches to working with spirit realms, her clients, and the paranormal field at large. Her websites are authornicolestrickland.com and sandiegoparanormalresearch.com, and she joins me this week to share her path and new book, The Afterlife Chronicles, Exploring the Connection Between Life, Death, and Beyond. Please join me in welcoming to Destination Unlimited, Nicole Strickland. Welcome, Nicole.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor.
Nicole, I have to congratulate you on your latest book, The Afterlife Chronicles. It is a marvelous and engaging compendium of paranormal and spiritual knowledge and experience written with care and compassion. So congratulations.
Thank you so much. Those words really make my heart shine. So thank you so, so much.
You're very welcome. And before we discuss this book, please share with our listeners your early experiences and how they set the stage for your path.
Sounds good. I'll try to do the paraphrased version or else we'd be here all day. So I'm one of these that, and I know this may sound cheesy in a way, but I feel like as if I was born into the field of paranormal research and afterlife study. It's just a feeling I get. And I had experiences that I couldn't explain going as far back as when I was 4 years old. Maybe before that, I just don't remember, but about 4 or 5 years old. And so I was born in Huntington Beach, California. Now I reside in San Diego. But when I was about 1 year old, we moved to, my mom, dad, and I moved to Las Vegas, Nevada. And so at the time, fast forward to when I was about 4 and a half, 5, we had a pool in our backyard and it was summertime and it was about dusk, you know, the sun was just starting to go down. And so we got out of the pool and we were drying off. And I distinctly remember this. I saw this floating dark gray. It wasn't really black. It was more like a dark gray sort of mist kind of float like by us. And I remember asking my mom and dad, I was like, mommy, daddy, did you see that draft? Now, I have no idea why at the age of 4 and a half or 5, I would have chosen that word draft to explain what I saw. But I distinctly remember asking that. And so even above that, not above it, but in addition to it, there was, I surmise maybe from the 1800s, a male spirit from the gold rush days, perhaps. And I would communicate with him so often. I'm sure my parents at the time probably thought I was talking to an imaginary friend. I was of that age. So, but this interest into mainly ghosts and hauntings, historic locations, the afterlife. I mean, there's all kinds of different categories of the paranormal. And my main focus is ghosts and spirits, haunted locations, afterlife studies. That just grew as I got older, and I would pretty much read anything I could on the subject. Now, fast forward to when I was a student at the University of Arizona. It was my senior year. And it was October 24th, I believe. Yes, of course it was. So my grandmother, my mom's mom, so my maternal grandmother called me the day before she passed. And she wanted to know if I was okay. I thought at the time, well, this is just random. This is odd. But I talked with her and we had a great discussion and then got off the phone the following morning on October 25th, by the way, which is my mom's birthday. So her daughter, of course, she called me. My mom called me and said, and I knew from the tone of her voice that something wasn't right. And so my mom called me, proceeded to tell me, I love you, sweetie, but grandma passed away. And I was devastated, of course, went out to San Diego, spent time with the family for a few days. And when I got back to Tucson, Arizona, where the University of Arizona is based, I started having these odd experiences in my apartment that I did not experience at all prior to her passing. Now, at first, I brushed them off as, well, I'm in an apartment. It's my neighbors making noise. It's vibration. It's anything else that, you know, than the paranormal. And so it started off with the doorknobs, specifically my front door and my bedroom door would rattle by themselves. And an interesting, I guess, caveat to that is when my grandmother was alive, she would go around her house at night and check the doorknobs to make sure they were locked. I still wasn't convinced. Then a couple of nights later, I was on my bed doing, I think I had my laptop out writing a paper or something. And I didn't see anything, but I felt this disembodied hand touch my face. And it felt as if it came from someone I knew and loved. It was just that energy. I knew it was someone familiar. Fast forward, even a couple of nights later, this all occurred within about a week's time. Again, I was in my room on my bed with my laptop out, and out of my left peripheral vision, I saw something. When I looked over, there was my grandmother full bodied. It looked as though she had a spotlight shining against her, and it created this white, bright halo around her. She appeared about 10 years younger. She had a smile on her face. She was wearing one of her favorite blue and white dresses, and it seemed to last for about 2, maybe 3 seconds. And then she just demanifested and faded right then and there. And that experience really culminated me into the research that I do today. And at first I thought, and I still wonder, was this some sort of a bereavement hallucination on my part? Did I project this from grief? But I really do think that this was some sort of visitation. I asked other family members, they didn't have it. It just seems to be me. So I think that my grandmother knew, maybe obviously before I did, that I would really like to be active in this field and that I could really sense and communicate with spiritual energies. And so I thank her. I'm indebted to her for this because she got me on the path of being in this field. And it's a huge passion. It's a labor of love. And I've learned so much on the way. And it's interesting that she passed away on her daughter's birthday. And so my mom always thinks, you know, well, maybe there's a gift in there for me with that. I don't know. But it was just a really phenomenal experience.
And I had a comparable experience with my paternal grandfather that I'll share a little bit later. But you've written several books on the famous ship, the RMS Queen Mary. For listeners not familiar with this storied vessel, please share with us your experiences researching and investigating her.
Absolutely. The RMS Queen Mary has a huge spot in my heart. It's a soul love that I have with the ship. So let me start out with just a very basic overview of the Queen Mary. So her design concepts began in 1926, and this was a time when other countries were competing to see who could have the largest, fastest, you know, most luxurious liner. And so those concepts started in 1926. And so she was constructed in 1934. Her work was halted due to the Depression, but people would send in letters to Sir Percy Bates, the Cunard chairperson at that time. And they would tell him, you know, this ship needs to be finished. It needs to be done. And so obviously, she resumed her building and beat the Depression at that point. And so her building, she finished that in 1934, and she was designated as Job 534. Now, Her Majesty Queen Mary of Teck is the one that christened her the Queen Mary, the RMS Queen Mary, Royal Mail Ship Queen Mary. During the launch, September 26, 1934. It was a huge celebration. They crashed like an Australian bottle of wine against the bow. It was a massive, massive achievement. And then her maiden voyage took place May 27th, 1936. And so she was an ocean liner, not a cruise ship. So her route was from Southampton to Cherbourg, France, to New York City and back. And so she carried both pre-World War II and post-World War II, people from all walks of life, celebrities, actors, actresses, business moguls, members of the aristocracy, students, people from all walks of life. And it was just, it's an amazing, amazing vessel. People, she was known as like a palace on the seas, basically. And then also the Ship of Beautiful Woods, because there were 56 different varieties of woods from all over the world that were used in her interior appointments inside the ship. And so then when World War II was imminent, she was requisitioned as a troop ship, mainly for two reasons: her size and her speed, along with her sister liner, the RMS Queen Elizabeth. And so she, during the full length of World War II, was a troop ship. She was a hospital ship at one point, carrying injured soldiers to the United Kingdom, and of course participated in carrying war brides. All in all, I think she's probably carried around 22,000 war brides. I'm even friends with one of them who was on the first wave of war brides in February of 1946. And so a huge, huge undertaking during World War II. Her efforts, along with other ships, of course, helped save the lives of many men, women, and children, and lessened the war by about 2 years. So, and then after the war was done and she was basically resumed her pre-war status as an ocean liner, that same route, New York, Cherbourg, France, and or Southampton, Cherbourg, France, and New York. And then in 1967, there were various bids from all over to get the Queen Mary in Long Beach, California. One out at $3.45 million, and she's been moored there ever since December 9th, 1967, commanded by Captain John Treasure Jones, and he is credited as saying, "The Queen Mary is closest to a human being of any ship I ever commanded." And that's something very interesting, because in my research since 2005, I've talked with so many people, for even current crew of today, former crew, captains, commodores, other crew members, even war brides, World War II servicemen who sailed on the Queen Mary, and they felt this kinship to her. They felt this aliveness to her, like she has this soul. And I would have to agree, she's a very sentient vessel. And I think it's one of the main reasons why she's touted as being one of the most haunted places in the world. I don't like using the word haunted because it has this negative connotation, but very paranormal, paranormally active on board. And I think there's this duality between the ship being sentient and one giant spirit, and then her human energies that choose to reside on her, and or those that come through, passing through. Maybe they choose to stay, maybe they choose to leave, but it's such an amazing historic vessel that I'm still learning history from the Queen Mary. And so I had to write three books. I just had to, because of the love I have. And so the first two are basically paranormal and historical overviews. And then the third book, RMS Queen Mary Voices from Her Voyages, was a labor of love as well. And I interviewed, took about 2 years to write, because I had to interview former crew and former passengers and war brides and veterans. I even got permission to republish some stories as well from her maiden voyage and other times in her history. And they're sold on board in Long Beach as well. And they do well on there. And it's such an honor. But the historical research, I mean, I'm still learning to this day. There's so much to learn about the Queen Mary. So
interesting. Hearing you describe your experiences and your research, do you feel an affinity with this ship, almost like a soul level affinity?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I forgot to say too, when I, the first time I stepped on board and I was introduced back in 2000, again, was at the University of Arizona, and came back out here in San Diego or Southern California for spring break. And a friend and I actually took one of those 3-day carnival cruises. And so I was first introduced to the Queen Mary from the backseat of a car. And I remember staring at the Queen Mary, this beautiful historic ship, and something told me, you know, Nicole, you're going to be back there someday. So fast forward in 2005, the second I stepped foot on A deck, and that's one of her hotel decks, I felt, it's hard to explain, but I felt an instantaneous soul connection. Like I've been there before. Everything about it was familiar. This just instant, like, love. And it felt like everything was right at that moment. And that's so it's happened to others. That's a blessed
experience. That really is a blessing.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And it's just, it's my second home, really. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You've done many investigations. What advice and perhaps code of ethics would you espouse to others in the paranormal field?
Great question. And I'm going to preface this by saying that I'm sick and tired of the sensationalism of the BS. I'm sick and tired of people exploiting the paranormal, exploiting the spirit realm, even other dimensions, even energies, even cryptids, for example, whatever the entity may be. I'm tired of people being in the field for the wrong reasons. Maybe they're just nothing but thrill seeking. There's nothing wrong with that. Don't get me wrong, but exploiting it for their own needs. Maybe they want to just be famous. Maybe they just want to copy what they're seeing on TV. Whatever the silly reason is, I'm sick and tired of that. I'm one of these people that really takes this work seriously. It's something that needs to be approached without an ego. It's something that needs to be approached with humility, with integrity, with dignity, and with respect. And so you're going to get a lot more with your results by applying the golden rule and treating these energies and the locations and even your fellow co-teammates with respect and dignity. That's what it all deserves. And so that's my main advice. I would also ask people to ask themselves, why do you want to be in this field? What are your reasons? And if it's something very silly and maybe, not really, maybe it's a sensational reason. I don't know. Maybe it's just a silly reason. Well, you know, I really would like you to ask yourself why you want to be in this field. What is your goal? What is your purpose? Because it entails a lot more than just, you know, prancing around a historical location and just in hopes of seeing a ghost. There's a lot that goes into it.
And especially when families call and say they're having manifestations in their home and are looking for help.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because over the years, I've become way more selective with private homes and even businesses. I'm talking about non-historic locations, because there could be various reasons. I mean, I'm seeing this trend where people are blaming, and I'm not trying to criticize people, but it's sometimes easier to blame something without looking inward and seeing maybe if you're causing it, right? So these people think that, oh my gosh, all these problems I have in my life, well, it's the paranormal's fault. It's the ghost's fault. And that's not always the case. So you really have to take these cases and treat them a lot like social work and do extensive interviews and try to determine if there's any mental or physical illness, anything that could maybe be harmful to these clients should a team go in and pursue an investigation or case study. I mean, I know groups. I've some of my good friends who are very good researchers. They've had experiences where they'll be like an hour or so into an investigation, a private residence, and then they find out that the homeowners or renters are trying to cause activity or fake things. And so you really have to really do extensive research and history just to determine that, you know, that it's safe to proceed, not only for your safety, but for their safety as well.
And the other thing that would disturb me about some of these shows, some of these sensationalist programs, is this concept of provoking spirit, provoking ghosts. To me, that is the essence of a person who was once alive and walking around in a body. And if they were standing in front of me, alive in their body, I would not say the things that some of these people say to them.
It's disgusting, isn't it? And there's an experience here. Several years ago, I don't watch these shows. I don't. But there was one night where I happened to have the channel on, and there was one of these, you know, it's a famous show that's been on for a while. And the scene was one of the investigators up somewhere. I forget the location, but was just provoking and demanding the energies to speak and really saying things like the F word to them and things like that. And it, it actually brought tears to my eyes. But that's the type of stuff that I just can't take. And it's horrible. It's just, it's horrible. Would you go up to a stranger in the grocery store and just start, you know, demanding them to answer your questions? No, you wouldn't. You would want to, you know, build rapport and get to know them and all of that. So
respect and dignity for spirit as well as for the human being in front
exactly.
of you. Absolutely. What inspired your new book, The Afterlife Chronicles, Exploring the Connection Between Life, Death, and Beyond?
Oh, that's a good question. This, of course, was a labor of love as well. And it only took about under a year to write. But in essence, it took my entire lifespan, because in there is just, a lifespan of experiences and insights and theories and, information from other people. I have many contributors in the book who opted to share very personal, very profound stories with spirit. And so it was just a really big labor of love. I'm still in the paranormal, but I think my true passion really lies with afterlife studies. And so to be able to write something on that, it's always been a dream of mine. And it's like I put my heart into it, you know, and hopefully people can tell when they read it that, wow, this author really has a passion for what she's writing about. So, but, and then all the contributions really support the different types of discussions I have in the book and the different topics. So there's stories throughout. So it was a lot of fun.
Her book is called The Afterlife Chronicles, Exploring the Connection Between Life, Death, and Beyond. Nicole Strickland, please tell our listeners where they can get your books and find out more about you and your amazing work.
Sounds good. So you can get my books on Amazon, pretty much on all the online retailers. The Afterlife Chronicles right now is on Amazon US and International. I'm also going to next week be publishing it through Ingram Spark. And so that will give it worldwide distribution. But my other books, you can find again online on all the online retailers. The Queen Mary books, you can, if you go to the ship, you can find them there, sold in the gift stores, which is really, really cool. It's really an honor. And then let's see, San Diego's Most Haunted and Spirits of Rancho Buena Vista Adobe, I believe, are in some select stores in San Diego because they're more regional books, but you can get them online as well. My website is author Nicole Strickland, and then my team's website is sandiegoparanormalresearch.com. It needs an update. I need to do that. I know. And then Facebook, my handle is Nicole D. Strickland, Afterlife Chronicles and Beyond. And then let's see, Instagram, author Nicole Strickland, all one word. And then Twitter, it's the acronym of my team. So SDPRS and then Nicole, and that's the Twitter handle. So.
And we'll be back with more of Nicole and the Afterlife Chronicles after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour,
if you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind,
walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out, and for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom. Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Mm-hmm. back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this week, Nicole Strickland. Her book, The Afterlife Chronicles, Exploring the Connection Between Life, Death, and Beyond. Nicole, you make a point of delineating the difference between with what most of us know as ghosts and spirits. Please share with us the difference between ghosts and spirits.
Sure thing. Now, I want to say this, that, you know, I have not been in that realm. So for me to sit here and say, I absolutely, with 100% certainty, can tell you what the differences are. Well, I kind of would be lying in a way, but based on theory and based on other people's experiences and research and all of that, we seem to think now, and I get caught doing this even myself, sometimes using the words interchangeably because it's easy to do that. But there seems to be a difference between the two. So a ghost, or earthbound, as many people call them, are energies of obviously human beings or animals that have passed on, that have physically died, if you will, so their body is no longer functioning, but yet haven't necessarily advanced through the higher ranks of spirithood. So they're more here on this plane by choice. It can be voluntary, it could be involuntary by choice. Maybe they had a drastic accident. Sadly, maybe they don't know they're gone. That's a very tragic situation, like with crisis apparitions and energies of that nature. Or maybe they choose to stay. Maybe they're feeling their surviving loved one's grief and they're choosing to stay. Or maybe it's they're drawn to a location. For example, some of the energies on board the Queen Mary choose to stay there. You know, it's unfinished business, whatever the reason may be. So a spirit is someone that maybe was an earthbound at one point and then was able to move on and transcend the earthbound state, if you will, and then move on to spirithood, or maybe they directly moved on to it right after physical death. So they're similar and different in the sense, of course, that they both deal with human energies that are now passed on, but spirit is just maybe a little bit more advanced, maybe has come to terms with his or her issues, whatever is keeping them in the earthly plane, and they just are a little bit more advanced in the afterlife and kind of ascending the ranks of it, if you will. So that's kind of how I would put it. But it's hard. I get caught in using the words interchangeably. And like, whenever I do, I was like, oh God, I correct myself, but it's easy to do.
Absolutely. You had talked about your experience with the spirit of your grandmother. I was one of those kids growing up in the 1950s who was labeled as having an overactive imagination.
Yes.
A label that was given to me because of what I shared with adults that no one else saw or experienced, or at least admitted to seeing and experiencing.
Yep. I
was
that.
I was very close to my paternal grandfather and remember being in my room reading, looking up, and seeing him standing in front of me. I asked him, Grandpa, when did you come in? And he just smiled, and within a few minutes, he disappeared. Wow. I went into the living room and told my parents, who chided me for imagining things. A few minutes later, a call came with the news of my grandfather's passing. Now, you share similar experiences in the Afterlife Chronicles. Why do our departed loved ones communicate with the living? And how may this manifest for others, especially for those who perhaps are not open to this phenomenon?
It's such an intriguing, fascinating concept. And, you know, it's an individual case-by-case basis because the reasons could be, you know, many. There could be many reasons. You could have 10 different people that have a similar experience, but maybe the reason as to why their departed loved one visited is different from the next. It's so fascinating, but I, you know, in the book I do talk about, and this is just my opinion, reasons for why spiritual energies communicate with us. I think part of it is to keep in touch. Maybe they want to help us with our grief. Maybe it's to warn us of, you know, potential danger. There's a story in my book that talks about that. It's a kind of a long story, but it's when you get to the end of it, you can see why, well, yeah, maybe that's true. Maybe spiritual energies just know and know when maybe we're going to be in danger and they're trying to prevent it. So there's a lot of different reasons. Maybe it's to educate us on something. I also think it's to show us that that life exists in the beyond, that when we die, it's not an end, it's a beginning, that there's life that goes on. I mean, if you reverse the word afterlife, you get life after, right? So it's to demonstrate that. But, you know, your experience, I mean, that's interesting. There is a story in my book, I think it's Marie D. Jones' story, and she also lives in San Diego, and she talks about something very similar that you experienced. And perhaps, you know, he knew you could sense him. And, you know, that's kind of what I think. It's a beautiful experience, though.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned your experience with your grandmother jiggling the doorknobs and other things. Mm-hmm. My experience seeing my grandfather. What are some of the ways or signs, other ways or signs, in which this communication may manifest?
Absolutely. There's many different ways. And again, every case is different. But going to some of the more obvious signs, you may see an apparitional or full-bodied sighting of your departed loved ones. You may hear them. You may hear them disembodied, maybe when you're around the house and you hear them. If you're an investigator and you're doing electronic voice phenomena sessions or spirit box sessions, ITC sessions, they may come through that. I have an experience with that, actually, I can share. You may sense them. And see, this is the one that's hard for people, because our logical minds want to try to automatically say, nope, that didn't happen, right? But if you're open to that, and if you're feeling in your heart and soul and you sense someone there with you, hang on to that, pay attention to that, because that is your own intuitive voice letting you know. Synchronicity is a big one. You may see or have experiences that are synchronous in nature, that, for example, let me use my cat Kaylee. When my cat Kaylee passed away, and she had a brother named Max, and they were litter mates. And so, like, the day after she passed, I was actually driving, and I think I was on my way to Starbucks, and I was at a stoplight, and I saw these two birds dance in unison. Like, I've never seen two birds dance in unison before. And instantly, what came to me is, wow, this is some sort of symbolic message letting me know that Max and Kaylee are reunited. So pay attention to those synchronicities. That's a huge one. Dream visitations is another one. I've had very profound dream visitations, especially with my cat Kaylee. They're not the typical types of dreams. These are dreams where it's almost like a dream visitation mixed in with an astral projection, where I'm Kaylee, I'm able to, even though I'm technically asleep, I'm able to feel her and see her and communicate with her while dreaming. It's very, very profound. So those are some ways, in my experience and in talking with others, where you can really, those are signs of spirit communication. And even look, animal behavior. You know, I think there's a story in there too in the book where, you know, the person's dog is behaving in a unique way to what's going on. So, but it's just my main advice is to trust your intuition and trust what your heart is telling you, and to look for those synchronous signs. Maybe they come through in music. Maybe they come through in objects. Maybe they come through in times, for example. The time my grandmother passed around 4:45 a.m. and my cat Max passed at around 4:45 p.m. Of course, different days, different years. But synchronicity-wise, I seem to see or be looking at a clock right when it's 4:44 or 4:45. And so pay attention to those.
Absolutely. I'm going to share a rather personal story. I had a life-changing relationship with a wonderful woman named Judy, and she transitioned in January of 1998.
Wow.
And it was life-changing in so many ways, and I'm not going to take up your time right now. I'll share it with you personally. But the day that she passed, I went and I made the funeral arrangements, and I came home, and we had two cats. And I was exhausted, and I was grieving, and I laid down on the bed, laid down face first. And I felt flump, flump, and the two cats got onto the bed, and they sat down like two little sphinxes in front of me by my head. And I was looking at them, and all of a sudden, their gaze went above the ceiling and then started following a motion as if something was coming down from the ceiling to the back. And I felt these two hands rubbing my back, and I knew it was her telling me that she was fine and that she loved me and thank you.
And I'm getting tears hearing that. Yeah. That's exactly how the spirit world works.
Yeah.
That's how it works. Yeah. And when you can have an encounter like that, that is life-changing, that helps you with your grief, it's soul-changing. You just have to hold on to it. That's a beautiful, beautiful story.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah.
In the Afterlife Chronicles, you share how many cultures understand the afterlife. Please share one or two that stand out for you.
Yeah, you know, I talk about that. And it's interesting, you know, since the dawning of man, how people, even going back thousands of years, how people from various cultures, various religious backgrounds have this interest in not only what happens to us when we physically die, if we ever do really die, that's a whole nother concept, but just different thoughts and perspectives on what happens to us when we do pass away. So, you know, the reincarnation aspect is something that really fascinates me, and different cultures believe in that, you know, that when we pass on, we are going to reincarnate in someone else and, you know, continue that way. So that really, really stands out. I even going back into the Egyptian type of culture and back in those days, how they would revere the dead and have, you know, these various ceremonies. And, you know, when you think of, you know, the tombs in Egypt and the pyramids, it's showcasing like a respect and a reverence to the deceased. And so that's something that I really like about that. But it just goes to show that no matter what culture you ascribe to or religion, there's always this fascination with what happens to us when we pass on and where do we go after we transition. So that's why I included it in the book.
In your book, you share something fascinating about what some people believe to be demonic. Please explain.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, this is a very, very controversial subject, and I know not everyone's going to agree, and that's fine. I mean, that's fine. We are all, you know, we're all different. We can, you know, agree, disagree, that's fine. But I have a different perspective on demons and all of that. And really the concept of a demon, again, applies to various cultures, different religions. But, you know, pretty much started with religion, really, if you think about it. And in the paranormal world, I'm strictly speaking of that, I don't believe that, let me say it this way. I think that, the percentages of people coming or riding teams to investigate because they feel a demon is in their house or something malevolent. Now, malevolent can be applied to human and demonic entities as well. You know, for the many people will think just because of their experiences and maybe their religious predispositions, you know, help them feel this way. I don't know. But they'll say, oh my gosh, I have a demon in my house. It's evil. It's trying to hurt me. It's trying to harm me. Honestly, I think I don't know if I'm going to throw a percentage out here, but I would say the majority of these alleged demonic situations are caused by the living. And it's either through whatever, their internal baggage they have and they're projecting it outward. They're creating a tulpa or, you know, a living thought form. They're creating it. And maybe that's what a demon really is. Maybe it's one big giant tulpa. I know there have been cases, and I'm not saying that maybe demons don't exist. I just don't think they exist prevalent like what people claim. And so that's just my thought on it. I think a lot of it could be caused just psychological projections on the part of the living.
Explain for our listeners the word tulpa.
Yeah, tulpa is an interesting thing. So if you're familiar with James, I think it's James Hilton's novel, Lost Horizon, the whole fictional paradise of Shangri-La, right? We've heard that. That's an example of a tulpa. So it's basically in I think it's Tibetan language, it means manifestation or emanation. So when you give something, if you're thinking about something and you're giving a lot of thought day after day onto something, well, maybe that thing that you're giving thought to creates its own life form and starts to come to life. That's an example of a tulpa. And so with this whole demonic sort of situation, a lot of these shows now on TV are starting to focus on demonic this, malevolent that. And so it's almost creating this big tumbleweed of negative energy, and it's causing other people that maybe are gullible or naive or don't really know anything to then ascribe to what entertainment is telling us. And so in a sense, it's creating this one gigantic big tulpa, right? So, and it's interesting because over the years, I've seen the in the percentages of private residence requests that have come my way in the last few years, the majority of them think they have something evil and negative in their home. Yeah. And that goes right along with the theme of entertainment focusing on this stuff.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, it's just, it's hard. It's hard to have to contend with it, but, you know, I don't know.
We shared about being openly intuitive as young children. How would you describe intuition, and how may your readers and our listeners open their intuitive selves?
So intuition and psychic senses or channeling, those go hand in hand. Intuition is something that is ingrained in all of us. It's like a invisible survival mechanism or a survival compass that helps guide us to safety or guide us to where we are supposed to be at any given moment in time. And so that, in a way, is the building block to developing someone's psychic senses, the six clairs, clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairgustance, all of that. And then so they pretty much are friends with a dear kinship. So intuition, an example of that would be, let's say you're, you know, driving down the freeway and your gut is telling you to get off this exit because this exit's going to have a gas station and you need gas. And so then you get off on that section and you were right. Okay, there's that gas station. Whereas psychic senses, for example, let's use the example of psychometry, where someone, I guess, is on an investigation or just maybe on a historical tour, and they pick up an item, maybe it's a historic rock or some sort of historic piece, and they're feeling it in their hands and they're starting to get senses from maybe a long time ago. Maybe it's emotions associated with it, or maybe they start to see visions in their mind's eye of someone who was associated with this historical object through psychometry. And so that's an example of using our psychic senses. So that's kind of how the difference on, they're similar but yet different, but yet they coexist and they go hand in hand.
Her book is entitled The Afterlife Chronicles, Exploring the Connection Between Life, Death, and Beyond. We'll be back with more of Nicole Strickland after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Imagine yourself being transported to India, to the banks of the Ganga and an ashram in Rishikesh. Visualize that you are welcome to satsang with an American sannyasi who shares the wisdom of her guru. Your visualization has manifested. Join Satvi Bhagavati Saraswati for inspiration and transformation every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio. Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Nicole Strickland. Her book, The Afterlife Chronicles, Exploring the Connection Between Life, Death, and the Beyond. Nicole, for parents with children demonstrating intuition the way we did as children, what advice would you offer them?
Oh, this is an excellent question. I do have a background with kids. I was a teacher and then have a master's in school counseling, so I'm have a background with kids, and that helps me with this. But, you know, and I'm going to say that we're all intuitive, right? And I do believe that children are more intuitive. It's similar to animals. And I think the reason, or one of the main reasons, is that their ego isn't as prevalent, and they don't live through their ego as much as adults do. And so, you know, my advice to parents is to pay attention to what their kids are telling them, pay attention to any patterns you see. And if you see that your child is starting to show signs of being intuitive or psychic, there's you have to nurture it. So, you know, don't try to chastise your kid for that or your child. Help them, show them that you believe in them and that you're going to help them foster that growth, because it's only going to improve their lives, right? So there's even, depending on how old the child is, there are, not support groups, that's not the right one, but groups that they can join with other like-minded individuals, and they can learn from them as well. So those are signs. You know, I do a whole presentation. It's called Children and the Paranormal, where I get into how a child at different ages and different, you know, the Erikson stage of development and the Piaget stages, in those stages, how children can react to and perceive the paranormal similarly and differently at each stage of their life. And then I get into, like, you know, the crystal and rainbow kids and signs of that and all of that. So it's a fascinating presentation, but my main advice is to pay attention to your kids and listen to them, and then help them to foster that growth in a positive environment.
What do NDEs, near-death experiencers, offer in terms of the afterlife?
Oh my goodness. I will say this, that people with NDEs, near-death experiences, or even shared death experiences, they give us glimpses into what exists for us when we pass on. There is story after story, culture after different cultures, different backgrounds, kids, adults, elderly individuals that have these stories. And these stories are all similar, with very similar traits as well, where they, you know, pass on, they evolved to a beautiful place, a paradise, where it molds itself to how their culture is and what their liking is. Just vibrant colors. There's this a connection of just eternal love. And then when they return back to their body, you know, they have this sense of renewed growth, no longer interested in materialism and all of that. It's this just pure, they're purely in touch with their soul at that moment. It really does show us, we need to listen to these stories, because there's so many of them, and it lets us know, wow, there's something out there. You know, when we pass on and we physically die, we're not going to go to nothingness. It's not going to just be a, you know, blank, you know, void. You know, we're going somewhere. It's the next stage in our soul's progression and maturity, and it's something to look forward to. And so that's the message I take from them.
Absolutely. You have a chapter in the Afterlife Chronicles on spirit guides. How may we be aware of their communication?
This is an interesting concept, and James von Prague is pretty much, I consider him an expert in the whole spirit guide realm, and we all have them. And I think it's similar to that inner voice that we have, whether that is just our inner voice or one of our guides. It could be a combination of both. We all have them, and there are different types of guides. You know, there's, you know, more educative types of guides, and there's, you know, ascended masters and thing and individuals or guides of that nature. But it's, we all have them, like I said, and it's, for me, it's learning how to know when they're coming to us and when they're trying to guide us in a certain way. And I think it's similar when we have an intuitive moment that can be perceived as guiding us to where we need to be, guiding us to safety. So it's very similar to that. And the stories, there's a few stories in the book too about spirit guides. And one, I believe it's Pete Orbea. He's a friend of mine from the Pacific Northwest. And then Ariel Grace too as well. And they're profound and give us kind of a look at what spirit guide communication may look like. So
you had mentioned the experience with your cats. I had mentioned mine. Are animals also spirit guides?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I believe they are. And I mean, you hear the whole thought of, oh, you have a guardian angel. You know, maybe my grandmother passed away. Now she's my guardian angel. That, you know, they can turn into spirit guides and be that. And even animals. I do believe in soul groups. I believe that animals and humans can share the same soul group. I absolutely believe that with my cats, Max and Kaylee, just because of the bond that we've shared. And I love all my animals, don't get me wrong, but there's something greater and deeper with the bond that I have with Kaylee and Max than any of my other animals. And it's like, I think we're part of the same soul group. So,
absolutely. You know, it's interesting about animals. I've found that I communicate with certain animals. I've had cats in my life, of course, a dog, but squirrels seem to like me.
Oh, that's
up, they come up to me and they like put their hands in a little begging motion. I have one that I named Oliver because it looks like he's saying, can I have some more nuts, please?
Oh my God, that is so precious. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, love absolutely. It. In addition to cats, do you have any special animals?
Special animals. And well, I mean, a lot of mine that are no longer with me, you know, I've had dogs. My dog Lady, when I grew up with, she died when I was in high school, sadly. But let's see, besides cats now, because I have a 22-year-old cat named Aries, and she's just plugging along. She's I love her. Yeah, I adopted her when I was in college, so 22 years old. Let's see, outside, we have a family of lizards. There's something about lizards, and this goes back to my childhood living in Vegas. I would go into the deserts, you know, back in the day when it was safe for kids to go wander in the desert, and I would go, I'll use the word hunt. I didn't hunt them, but I would go seek out lizards, and I sometimes would catch them, and it was just, it was a pastime of mine, and now here I am in my adult years, and we have a family of them living in our front and backyard, and it's so cute to see them. So, and we name ours too. One is, I named one Bubba, I think. Another one I named, I think, Buddy Holly. I don't, you know,
That's just funny.
It's great. So,
what would you like readers to take away from the Afterlife Chronicles?
Good question. So, if I had to, and I've been asked this before, if you had to summarize the book in one or two sentences, it would be this. That even though our loved ones that are departed are no longer physically with us, they are still with us. Their essence, their soul, their energy is always with us. There's always that connection. It's undying, endless love. And so that's basically the point that I want to take away, that I want people to take away. The other one is that there's this undying connection between mortality and the afterlife. The two worlds, I think, are destined to intertwine with each other. And there's something happening, I think, in the cosmos that's allowing the two worlds to join together even more and learn from each other and help each other. And so those are the two biggies, big takeaway points that I want people to get from the book.
Her book is an amazing read. It's called The Afterlife Chronicles, Exploring the Connection Between Life, Death, and Beyond. Nicole Strickland, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your work.
Sure. So you can get my books on online, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, all those online retailers. The Afterlife Chronicles right now is just on Amazon, US and international, but I'm next week going to be publishing it through Ingram Spark. So that'll make it get worldwide distribution. So really looking forward to that. And then Queen Mary books you can get online or not. Well, online, yes, but you can also get them on the ship in Long Beach as well. And then let's see, San Diego's Most Haunted and Spirits of Rancho Buena Vista Adobe you can get online and then in some select stores in San Diego because they are regional books. Let's see, online, my website is sandiegoparanormalresearch.com, my team's website, and then my website is authornicolestrickland.com. You can find me on Facebook. Nicole D. Strickland is my main page there. And then author Nicole Strickland for Instagram. And then Twitter is my team's handle. So SDPRS and then Nicole, all one word, SDPRS Nicole for Twitter. So.
And where can people hear your podcasts?
Oh, that's right. Yes. So I have a podcast. I started in 2020. It's called The Afterlife Chronicles. So same as my book. That's on WLTKDB.com. I'm currently on hiatus, but I should be resuming in the next few months. And so that can be, you can find that pretty much wherever podcasts can be found. We use StreamYard as well. So you can get the live versions as well as the MP3 archives, pretty much where podcasts can be found. And then I also co-host Haunted Voices Radio on Friday nights with my friend Todd Bates. And so same network, WLTKDB.com. So
Nicole, thank you so much for joining us and sharing, most importantly, the positive message that you bring to the paranormal community and to our world. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was an honor to be on your show. Thank you so much.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.